every Saturday morning at 5 a.m.
Regular listeners will no longer have to figure out which Saturday morning is the alternate one. Back of the book, every Saturday morning at 5, only here on WBAI New York.
Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware.
Hello and welcome to The Aware Show. I am Lisa Garr, and thank you so much for joining me today.
I want to mention really quickly before we start here that you can become a WBAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a monthly reoccurring donation to WBAI. It could be $3 a month, $5 a month, $25 a month. And you will receive not only a discount card for discounts around town, you'll also get a WBAI tote bag. And if you sign up during the next 2 weeks, they're also sending an additional WBAI premium grab bag item to show our appreciation. So just go to WBAI.org or call 516-620-3602. Make sure to mention that you're supporting The Aware Show, and we will stay on the air. Thank you so much. We look forward to having you as a BAI buddy. And now let me ask you a question.
Wow. Have you ever said to someone, I'd love to get together, but I'm so busy? Have you ever found yourself saying, how are you? And you answer the question, busy. And specifically for women, there's the family commitment, the career commitment. If you are a career person, there's the personal commitment. There's so many different commitments that we have. And we tend to be overscheduled. I don't know why specifically it's happened to us, but we're going to find that out today. There's a great book called Breaking Up with Busy. This great book, and it offers solutions for overscheduled women. Are you an overscheduled woman right now? I am. Welcome to the show, Yvonne Talley. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure to be with you, Lisa.
You too. My goodness. So why do you think we get to this place in the overcommitment, overscheduling, lack of ability to say no, all those great things?
Right. Well, it took us a while to get here, and we are fully planted in the world of busy now.
We are.
And it certainly has affected all of us, but women so much more. And there's three big glaring aspects and reasons why that's occurred. Of course, economics has very much to do with it. Technology, which affects all of us, also has a lot to do with it. And then this disconnection with from nature. But this role of getting too busy, particularly for women becoming the overscheduled woman, you know, when we set out 40 years ago, everybody's role, if you will, were defined. And when it became necessary for women to come into the labor force much more, we realized, hey, there's some things going on that are not quite equal, if you will, or even in this sense of being able to make a healthy living and care for our families, because 80% of women working in the field of in any career are still caring for school-age children. Two-thirds of them are caring for school-age children, and 80% of the non-paid work that is done by women. And we're still on average making about 80 cents to the dollar for a man for the same type of work. And if you're a woman of color, that drops down to about, you know, another 20% less, about 63 cents a dollar on the dollar. So the economics of this have really set this up.
Yeah.
But just as a culture, busy has this allure, almost this false status symbol, if you will, that if you're busy, mm-hmm. you're important, and you connect with others in that way.
Mm-hmm. I love that you say that that I'm busy is the new I'm fine.
Yes. We once greeted one another with that response, oh, I'm fine, and now it's become, I'm busy, and that much, so much more, because we want people to know, hey, I am busy. I'm busy just like you, and if I'm busy and you're busy, we can connect in that way. You get me, I get you. We can move on, and I'm important, you're important. And a lot of this has to do with this comparison game, what I call the comparison game that's brought on through technology, continually comparing ourselves to other, racing to catch up, racing to be the best, and do it all, and then repeat, repeat, repeat.
Right. You are a little familiar with this, right? Tell me a little about your story. You don't just wake up and write a book about this. You have to come from some level of experience.
Yes. Well, I'm like everyone else in living a busy lifestyle. And they say to write what you know, so that's what I did. I was so busy teaching others how to live a vibrant and healthy lifestyle, growing my business, raising my daughter as a single mom, that I missed my own signs of busy and overscheduled. You know, that fast pace, the sleepless nights. In fact, I prided myself on coming into work. Oh, yes, I'm just fine on 5 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the crammed schedules and all of that landed me in the hospital emergency room thinking I was having a heart attack when, in fact, I was having a panic attack brought on by stress. And I was so embarrassed. I felt like a fraud. I thought, here I am, this healthy, organic eating, positive thinking, meditating, exercising person. And how could I end up here? If I could allow this to come into my life and miss all of the signs, there's got to be a bigger picture to this. And so I set out to find it scared me enough. I set out to find the solutions for myself and for others, because what I was finding in my practice, helping and working with primarily women, that this wasn't an isolated case. This was affecting women and people mm-hmm. all over the country.
What were you doing before then? What was your business?
Oh, I'm still in the same business. Mm-hmm. I'm a healthy lifestyle consultant, and I'm also a neurolinguistic practitioner. So I couple all of that into my work. It's a fitness and a food and an attitude piece that I bring in to help people live a healthy and healthy lifestyle. And I'm still doing that. I just do a lot of speaking and a lot of presentation now in addition to that as well.
So you were doing this beforehand, wound up having a breakdown. How did you change your business afterwards?
Well, I do a lot more consulting now than I did before, certainly. This is something that has affected so many people, and I take together what I use, my solutions that I use have really come across as not only a practical way, but a mindset way. And I brought in meditation much more now than I ever have before into my practice as well, and really moving into this resetting the mindset. Where before, in the beginning of my business, it was very much focused on fitness and food and nutrition. And that's still a key part in working in living a healthy lifestyle, of course, a well lifestyle. The bigger part that I really focus on now since this panic attack that I have, and thankfully, knock on wood, I've never had one since then. I think it's because it scared me enough to make these changes. But when I brought in the neurolinguistic program training, we can talk about that if you'd like, but when I brought that piece in and I was able to develop these different mindfulness with the practical, that's really what shifted for me after this episode in the hospital.
Now, let's talk about, first of all, there's two things. I want to know so much about the solutions, but I want to stay for a second on the issue of technology and how it does tend to make our lives easier and more complicated at the same time. What do you think?
I agree 100%. And I always say it's kind of like we walked into the candy store and we saw this new candy that we'd never had before, and we shoved as much in our pockets as we could before anybody saw us, and then we got out. And what we realized is we had way too much, but yet we wanted to absorb and consume all of it. Well, technology is like that. We want to absorb and consume all of it, but we didn't set any boundaries around it. And we know that it has a very addictive quality to it, and it is something that has really caught most of us by surprise. And when we think about how much time we spend with technology, we spend an average of 5 hours a day just on our phone.
So 5 hours a day?
That's a good reason why we're busy. Yeah, we touch it, we move it around, we play with it, we text it around 2,600 times a day we're touching it, and that's probably a low estimate. There's a lower and more from that up to 5,000 times a day. So it's really integrated into our lives. And when I think about the millennials, what they are dealing with, not only this constant comparison game, but this addictive quality of technology and how it holds us in place. However, I believe that becoming aware of that, when once awareness arrives, then we can begin to make a shift. And because we are seeing the impact it has on somebody, so many people's health and wellness, we're now starting to come up with solutions for this. And that's not to say technology is bad. I mean, we would not have the mobilization of movement, of social awareness, or even medical advances if it weren't for technology. And I live right in the heart of technology. You know, Facebook and Google are right around the corner. And it is really something, as you said, that offered us the illusion of convenience, which it has, but it's also brought on this disconnection from not only from our neighbor, but when it comes into our personal relationships, it creates great distractions. And it's very difficult to be emotionally intimate when we're distracted.
True. Very true. But it's something that it's all about awareness. So you have in that heart of Silicon Valley, I want to talk about what type of overscheduled woman we are. And I need to pay attention to the fact that men are also overscheduled. Why specifically focused on women in your book?
Yes, men are overscheduled. And again, this busyness is a culture now. It's gone from being part of our day to being a habit to being our culture. And it really, again, it's that idea that we're going to feel a sense of importance. It's become our new pace, our new juice. You know, one time the economics said, oh, if you belong to the leisure class, that means you've made it. That means you've got time to take off. That means you've really hit the mark and you are in that place. Well, that we have completely flipped that on its head now, and busy is what speaks to that. I've made it, and the reason why I've made it is I've kept busy, I've kept focused, a lot of people want me, I'm in high demand, and that feeds into that idea that we're important. Men are not as busy, and we can learn from that. We can take a page from their playbook and learn a couple of things. One is they take about 15% more leisure each week, and that averages out to about 40 minutes a day. So that's a big chunk right there. Again, the economics for women to be more busy is that we have to work longer hours for that equal pay. And when you have two-thirds of us with school-aged children that we're working outside of the home, there's a big difference. You know, we've got 43% of single moms are below the poverty line, where 24% of dads are. So it's an issue for all of us, and I really think that we can shift this together rather than separate. But to answer your question, how we got there, how women got here so much more, that has a lot to do with it. And the economics of it have just a tremendous amount to do with it.
Well, I also think it has to do with women have more of a need to be the caregiver than men do typically. I'm looking at the overall statistics. So this is why there's more of a tugging on us emotionally, physically, to be there for our kids. And it definitely adds to the complexity of it all.
That's very true. And it's need is part of it, but even the more so than that, Lisa, is that expectation. We are supposed to know. I remember when I was pregnant with my daughter thinking, I don't have a clue as to what I'm going to do. And I kept thinking, but I'm supposed to know this. So we have this sense that we're supposed to know exactly how to be that caregiver and balance all of that. What we forgot is there's this tremendous stress about not only being the caregiver, but also being the provider. And that's the tug. That's the big tug. So, yes, I think if we were to paint with a broad brush, women are definitely more primed, programmed, whatever you want to say. Our brains are built differently, that's for sure, to be the caregiver. And we do that really well. We've had a lot of practice, and we've certainly proven that we've done that really well. A lot of men are also really good caregivers. But there's this guilt that if we don't do it right, if we don't do it well, if we don't do it often, that we're not measuring up. So
well,
that little piece.
It's also a stigma. I mean, if you look at movies and you see, I don't remember what movie I saw, but it was, there were single moms and they were dropping their kids off at school and they were saying, oh, well, her dad. And it's just a meme in culture. But then if you think about aging parents and who takes care of the aging parent the most is usually the daughter.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
It's built in.
Yeah, it's the caregiving end of it. And in a lot of the cultures, a lot of different cultures, that is just the expectation. So it really is an expectation. And this, you know, I've been on both sides. I've been not only a working mother outside of the home, I've been a mother, full-time mother inside the home years ago. And there is a difference. I do think we're starting to come together more as a sisterhood and a tribe, I hope, rather than keeping that division, because we all need one another. That's the most important thing from this, is we all need one another. But when we take it into the individual basis of a woman being an overscheduled woman, all, you can see how all of these layers begin to stack up. The expectation, the guilt, the assumption that we're supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z. And remember, we're supposed to be nurturing and caring for these young children and moving them forward to help the generations move forward. And this is something that we need to remember, that we need to do not only with our partners, but with help as well.
Well, knowing that it affects generations is also gives a whole nother layer to learning these solutions. So, super solutions. Let's identify the different types of overscheduled women so that you can find your piece in this, and then go after some of the solutions that apply to the different types.
Yes. Well, I identify five in the book, and there's the time optimist, the perfectionist, the sorority sister, the pleaser, and the alpha. So you might find a little bit of yourself in each one of those, but these are typically what I have not only worked with, the type of women that I've worked with, but the pleaser seems to be very prevalent, and she's the one to call when you're in a crunch. She's generous, always willing to help. She's dependable, prides herself on getting things done. You know, she's got that I can attitude. The downfall for her is when she spends a lot of time, or she spends just a disproportionate amount of time doing things for other people. And in the process, she finds it difficult to allow others to do things for herself, for her. So this sets her up to saying yes, yes, and yes. There's an exercise in the book called Count Your Yesings. So this is a good one for her. This would be one of her breakout solutions. And on the other end of the spectrum is the alpha. And the alpha is that natural-born leader with a lot of magnetism. She's a strong communicator, highly motivated and confident about her character. And she does not like to fail. And when she drives herself to be overly competitive, overly aggressive, overly domineering, that's when she begins to push people away, and that puts her in a position of not having that emotional intimacy that she really does crave. So one of her best self-cares to begin with would be to lighten up, and of course that's something we can all do for ourselves, but hers is to lighten up and get comfortable letting go of a little bit of that control, of course, in an environment where she feels safe, emotionally safe, with people from her inner circle, so that she can really start to allow herself to be a bit more vulnerable so that she can bring that emotional intimacy in her life.
Vulnerability, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A little challenging for the alpha type.
Well, for most of us, I think, too, because it's a scary proposition when you're uncertain of things.
What about the sorority sister? What type of overscheduler is she?
Well, she is the one that is going to call the band together. She places a high value on including others, and that's, you know, she's very civic-minded. She is a great volunteer, and she's really good about juggling her day with a light-hearted, kind of carefree attitude. So she's highly sociable, friendly, and again, we need these people in our lives. They're the ones that, you know, get the team going and can really bring up the level of enthusiasm in so many. And her desire to belong is very important to her. This is how she makes herself feel comfortable. So her strength is not only bringing people together and caring about the group, but if it's done so much that she'll forget her own image of who she is. So she needs to connect with herself, build her self-confidence first so that she can really get in touch with who she is separate from the group, rather than always being at the end of someone saying, great job, you know, thanks for doing this. She needs to find that within herself.
So to take care of herself more, maybe go to the gym, find, you know, a good diet lifestyle, something like that,
yeah.
Right?
Well, also, too, those are great practical practices and solutions. to set her boundaries are very important, to code her calendar, very important as well. And again, count her yesings. How many times is she saying yes, and how many times does she really feel as though that's something she wants and needs to do? And then from the mindset, you know, how about the power of your beliefs? It's really important because we go through life believing certain things, and then we get to a part in our life where we're still operating on those beliefs, whatever they may be, yet they're not working for our life anymore. So she needs to get in touch with what's really important to her, what are her belief systems, and how are they working for her.
Okay, don't worry if you're identifying with all of these so far. We're going to go through two more, but there are solutions, which we're offering along the way here. So far, I've hit pretty much two out of the three. All right, let's go for perfection.
Maybe because I have a little bit of that in me, but she's the one that has so many irons in the fire, and she coordinates events and people really well. And she's that person that says, I have enough time to do this one more thing. And what ends up happening is she creates this frustration within herself and often with the people that she works close with, because one of the things that she does quite often is she's late everywhere she goes. So she's got to be able to pull back and set better boundaries again for her time and try not to bite off so much, because the overpromising is really what gets in her way and ends up creating this frustration. And at the end of the day, she feels as though she often will kind of beat herself up that she didn't get enough done. Well, it's about readjusting what enough looks like to her. So it's one of her self-cares, of course, is to remind herself that she is not about what she's doing, but who she is within, so that she needs to slow down enough that she can listen to that message and figure out who she is. And one of her practical things that she can do is what I call rate the rush, because we will jump into the day every day thinking, this is important, this is important, I've got to go here, I've got to do this, I've got to be there for that person. And someone once said, if everything is important, then nothing is. So this would be a good mantra for her to remember.
Yes. Yeah. Rate the rush. So how do you rate a rush?
Again, it's going to be, is this important today, this week, in a month, even in a year? And once we make that pause, and I always say, imagine a pause button right in front of you. This is a great visual. Just hit that pause button. Take a deep breath, because we know when we take a deep breath, we stimulate something called the vagus nerve, which triggers our nervous system to slow our heart rate, lower our blood pressure, and decrease our cortisol. Mm-hmm. When we do that enough, we then can allow the part of the brain that can actually plan and problem solve to kind of reboot. So very important, just a few deep breaths. Mm-hmm. Then we can determine what that rush is about. And you would be amazed at how often we go, I don't know why I was even doing that, because it's a habit. Mm-hmm. We're used to that pace, Lisa, and it becomes something that we're comfortable with. So slowing down is not familiar to us. So we continue to keep that pace because it is comfortable in a way that it's familiar.
Hmm. What if all of the things that you have on your plate are things that need to get done, like family and market and stuff? I mean, how do you suggest delegating? It's obviously an illusion to think that they all need to get done. Do you suggest delegating in the, you know, to the multitasker?
Oh my goodness. Those are two great questions. Or I say questions or statements, because the multitasker first, yes, delegate. And I'll always say what my mother said. She raised six kids mostly on her own. And we each had not only chores and obligations that we were responsible for, we all took a part in what needed to be done, because obviously she was working outside of the home. So when we do that for our kids, our partners, or the people that are in our lives as significant others, just remember there's a give and take here. And this I always like to really make a strong point about, because for us as women, we do have a tendency to be the givers, the overgivers, not all of us. And what we're doing when we're doing that, we're caring for, we're nurturing. But what about the other side of that, the person that's receiving? We know that it feels great to give. So let's give someone else the opportunity to be able to do that. Certainly with our children, when we give them the opportunity to give, to be a part of something, to delegate to them of their responsibility, we help them build their self-confidence, their own sense of who they are, develop their attributes from within so that they have the strength to move forward independently. Even the simplest task of setting the table, changing the laundry, whatever domestic things are needed that we need help with, they might grump and groan, which they probably will, but at the other end of that, we want them to be able to move through that so they get to the other side of that so that when they do go off to college, they know not only how to do those practical things, but they have that sense of confidence that they can care for themselves. So that's really important, just life skills on its own.
Right.
And then, you know, I have an exercise called the Artful Ask. And because many of us are not used to asking for help, so we have to develop that ability and that habit of asking for help and be comfortable with that. So, again, it's just about developing these practices and practicing them and then putting them into play.
Okay, and I love your exercises. This is really, it's really helpful because in this, it's kind of overwhelming in a way to be recognizing that you're even out of sorts with your scheduling. It's the last thing that you have time to look at. Yet when you go and schedule the vacation, it's still like you get on the vacation and you overschedule the vacation. It's like plan
yes.
this and let's plan that and let's plan this. And the real permission needs to come from within and the structure needs to come from within in order to actually set up success. There was one of the overscheduled OSW, the types, overscheduled
yes.
woman types, that we didn't touch on, the time optimist.
Oh, we did the time optimist. That was the one that I kind of identify with, who always thinks she has a chance to do one more thing.
Oh, I thought that was a perfectionist.
No, perfectionist. Maybe we didn't do the perfectionist. So the perfectionist. Oh, we didn't do the perfectionist.
Okay.
Yes, you're right. Highly driven, can accomplish numerous goals. She's quite the multitasker, and she thinks that's going to help her, but we know that that doesn't. We know the brain can't differentiate between two dissimilar tasks. It can only do one. So when she learns to accept that, she will definitely reduce her anxiety and stress about getting things done just right. However, you know, her resourceful characteristics, she's methodical and detailed-oriented and definitely has a tendency to be artistic and creative and dependable, certainly prudent. Her unresourceful characteristics is her perfectionistic tendencies. And if she allows them to dominate several areas of her life, it's got to be right, it's got to be perfect, no flaws, no cracks, then this is going to be something that she's going to continually try to achieve. And, of course, we know perfection is just
impossible.
Not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Someone once said if we wait around for perfection, we're going to be waiting a long, long time. So she can definitely be her own worst enemy, and she quite often struggles with that vulnerability to allow her cracks to show through. In fact, she will even procrastinate to avoid doing something that might be what she deems wrong or imperfect. So mistakes to her are not considered opportunities. They're considered unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things...
True,
one
yes.
of the things... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that she can do, of course, is to, this is a big one, practice vulnerability. Give herself permission to not always do things perfect. And, of course, both those exercises are in the book. And then the practical standpoint is, the practical solutions, a couple of them would be to not only develop her healthy no, and, again, that rate that rush, but also to come up with what I call mind your mantra. And that is to focus on the day of what you want to create. And I say this a lot. Once we begin to focus on what we want, rather than what we fear, we shift our energy into solution rather than problem. So this is an important one, especially for the perfectionist, because she is designed by nature to look for problems because she's going to fix it and make it just right. So for her, it's going to be about, again, turning that around and really focusing on what do I want to create? Not perfectionism, but what feeling do I want to have
mm-hmm.
in this day?
Rather than what everybody else wants from you or what you're, quote, obligated to do or how many people are leaning on you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just a simple mantra, Lisa, of I want a sense of calm. Just repeating that, we begin to shift the smallest ways that we work through our day or that we are in our day. We might even slow the way we speak. We might slow the way that we walk or talk or even drive for that matter. And when we begin to shift that energy, those around us will begin to respond to that as well. It's keeping your center, keeping that center awake and alive, and continually going back to that idea of what I want to create for the day.
Have you ever done a personality profiling where, like, the perfectionist should not be engaged with the person who takes advantage of people, stuff like that?
Well, that certainly would be an interesting second book.
Yes, there you go. Do a personality profiling. If you're this type, do not engage with this type because it will make your life worse.
Exactly.
So in terms of just focusing on that for a second, you said focus on what you do want, like what you want and the feeling that you want to create out of that, right?
Yes. So again, it could be everything from what you're going to actually do in the day, but I really try to help people move from the doing into the feeling, because this busy pace is what has disconnected us from the feelings. The busy pace has what really has created this overconnectedness with getting it done. So when we slow down enough to take a deep breath in, certainly to meditate, that's a big part of what I do and a big, what I think is a very important solution. We create space then to really kind of quiet the distractions, and it's a way to edit what we're thinking, because everything begins between the ears. If we can get it straightened out between the ears as far as what we're thinking, our doing will shift. So again, focus on what you want, not what you fear. Because think about it. We use our imagination every day with what I call the what ifs. What if this happens? What if she does this? What if he does that? What if, what if? And that is just using our imagination in a way that I call unresourceful. That's a neurolinguistic kind of word that we use quite a bit. That's an unresourceful way of using our imagination. Well, imagination is energy. In fact, Einstein said imagination is more important than knowledge. So when we can take that power of imagination and shift that into a 3-minute meditation to imagine what we want our day to feel like, and even if we have a task coming up or a difficult situation, we turn that into an opportunity, because we're going to create the feeling that we want that to be within our day. I want to have a sense of confidence. I want to have a sense of calm. And we bring that and move that into our meditation, 3 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it might be. And you'll be amazed at how your day will shift into that pathway rather than in the what-if pathway.
Then you're in control of your day. And I think a lot of the need for perfectionism, I'm talking about it from personal experience, is being the perfectionist is usually out of control, which is why they need to control. And that's, I'm speaking from my personal experience. And rather than looking at reclaiming my day and doing the things that I want to do, I judge myself because there's all these other expectations on me to support the world and the people in it. So that I put on myself, and I've kind of set it up that way. The funny thing is that when I was interviewed an astrologer, a great astrologer the other day, Glynis McCants, and she was saying that my numerology says, no, I'm sorry, numerologist, not astrologist. Sorry about that, Glynis. She says in my chart, I'm a naturally busy person. I like to accomplish things. My chart, astrologically probably as well as numerologically, says I am the type of person that is purpose and mission driven. Now, I take that, and I don't like boredom, but I know that I'm a creative, active person. How do I find that healthy balance between busy and chaos? What's that balance?
It's a great question. When we're busy with busy, we create chaos.
Right. Right.
When we're busy, I think let's just define this. There's a difference between busy and productive. Purpose driven, mission driven has a very clear priority to it. You've probably got a system to it, a system of thinking, a system of doing. That's being productive. Being busy is saying yes to everything. Being productive is setting our priorities and knowing when to say no. So we have to really get clear on that, because most of the women that I work with are exactly as you just said. They are busy. That's a word that we use quite often for everything. And when we start to shift that language, because language is so important, the language that we use with ourselves and others, when we begin to shift that language to, I am a productive person, rather than I am a busy person, it makes a difference within our own brain as far as how we're going to now perceive what it is we're doing. So, yes, honor that. Honor that sense of purpose and that sense of mission. And then slow down enough to honor it fully. And when you slow down long enough or enough or in frequency, you can then begin to edit that busy. It's just stuff. It's stuff that we think we should be doing. It's places we think and feel we should be. And we get onto this pathway and we continue to do that until finally and it cannot be sustained. That's what I'm concerned about. This pace cannot be sustained. I mean, I'm living proof of that. Mm-hmm. This was, again, a real wake-up call for me. And I've worked with many, many women and men, I might add. It's not just women who have panic attacks, that have also said, I don't know how I got here. I am exhausted, and I get up every day, and I do the same thing over again. So it's time to edit. We don't have to walk into this and say, I've got to make big, sweeping changes, because that becomes just another thing we have to do. I'm talking about just shifting one thing from a practical standpoint and one way of thinking, resetting your mindset. And if that starts with that 3-minute meditation, how about 1 minute? Just begin the practice, because that's what it is. It's a practice. We've practiced being busy, and we're really good at it, right? We've taught everybody around us how to do it. It trickles out. It doesn't just stay within us. Uh-huh. It trickles out. Teach our kids how to do it and our partners as well.
Well, I love that you created this organization about the Sisterhood of Traveling Scarves. How important is sisterhood and having some type of organization of like-minded, regular meeting women that you can check in with and get grounded with? And then I want to find out why the scarves. But let's talk about, I have a great mastermind group of women. Every other week we meet for an hour on Zoom call, and there's just 8 of us. And, we go over our what we feel that our challenges and struggles are, and then what our intentions are. So we have a chance to be heard and to talk and feel heard and talk about what's even working in our lives, and then also to talk about what our intentions are. And it's really great. And then for about a minute, each person has a silence, a moment of silence of focusing on that one person's intention. And we do that, 7 or 8 times. So I love that. It's super easy to do. It's every other week, and it's an hour on a Zoom call, and you keep a structure and you don't make it into a complain fest. You really support each other as women. And sometimes there's 5, sometimes there's 7, sometimes there's 8, but we keep this going, and it's really been super beautifully supportive for me. So I suggest that to anyone. Do you have any other suggestions?
Well, first of all, I want to be a part of that. Sounds fantastic. Is there room for one more?
Really fun.
Yes, you're doing exactly what's in the book, and that is you're focusing on what it is you want to create, what it is you want to bring into your life, what it is you want to feel. And that's the beauty of using your energy, your passion, your power from within, your power of imagination, power of choice, whatever you might see it as. This is exactly what I am advocating for all women. It used to be, Lisa, that we had a community. I remember going home. I was a flight attendant for years, and I remember going home. My mother would, pat the couch. Come sit down. Let's visit. And it was always a time to visit. And I remember thinking, oh, here we go again. I miss those days where you just go and you visit. I do that with my sister still, and we enjoy it. That's what you're doing, but you're doing it in a really productive way that can really help one another within the group. And so many of us live separate, alone even, and fractured away from our families. So developing our family of sisters of whomever it may be, is really important for us because as humans we want to connect and we want to be part of a group. So yes, I do the same thing. It's very important that we bring together women, like-minded women or women from different pursuits and come together, do it on a weekly basis, a monthly basis, whatever works, and be that support network. And it's a great way to also problem solve, to have a great time. You know, don't forget, laughter is absolutely mm-hmm. fantastic for the brain and the body, and that connection, that dopamine, that oxytocin all gets lifted up within us. So these things are very important, but make a commitment. And if no one is doing it, then you organize. Organize that sisterhood of like-minded women and share with it your challenges and devise a network for bringing awareness to those challenges. And you're going to have a sense of hope and helpfulness, and that will, of course, make you feel better and give you a stronger sense of willingness and ability to move through difficult and challenging times.
Yeah. I mean, we've been through a lot over the last, maybe it's been a year and a half, and each person individually has gone through like what massive health challenge or huge business challenge. One went through a lawsuit. I mean, there were so many different things that we've all gone through, but we all support and help each other throughout the process. And it helps to have other people who are high-minded, conscious women, by the way, that reflect back to you, look, you did that, you made it through that, you can do this.
Yeah.
And and then it's often interesting because the seven of us will be going through the same thing at the same time. Like, we'll all feel something is happening, or we'll all feel this. And I've recognized the themes as we've gone through the months and the years that you start to create a field within the group and mm-hmm. move yourselves along. It's really a nice thing to do. You could do it, you know, if you're in the same area, you could do it over coffee, or you could, if you're not in the same area, you could do it over Zoom. It's totally, you know, it's free. Set it up and connect with people. But it does help to get into your schedule on a regular basis, because there's many times that I'll say, God, I really don't have time for this, but let me just sit here. And every time I do that and really connect with these women, I'm so glad I did. You know, mm-hmm. it's a good thing to do. All right, so you said there's just one other term I keep flagging here, and it's count your yes-ings. Tell me about that.
So the yes-ings, it's this exercise in the book, and it gets a lot of my clients are, I love that one, I need that one, I've got to do that one, because we so often find ourselves saying yes to things that we didn't expect. So, and just in a nutshell, that's what it's about. If you find yourself at the end of the day thinking, oh, why did I say yes to that? How could I have gotten myself into that situation again? It's probably time to do what I call count your yesings. So, and it's one of those things where if you say yes to something, and then at the end of the day, you've said yes to six things that you had no intentions of saying yes to, that just were popped onto your schedule or asked of you, then the next day, if those were six things, and the next day, stop saying yes when you hit that number five. Then the next day, stop saying yes when you hit that number four. And by means, this is not about being unhelpful. This is about setting a boundary. That's all this is a boundary-setting exercise. Because what happens is we often say yes to things before we even realize that we're saying yes to it, and it becomes a habit. So it's important that we're mindful about the feelings that stir within us. Are we feeling anxious? Do we feel guilty? Do we feel uneasy? And don't judge them. Just observe them. And at the end of the day, you know, to take account as to how many times you felt that with those yesings. And then learn how to do what I call your healthy no. That's really important, is to be able to have not only give yourself permission to say healthy no, because, again, it's setting boundaries. It's also a way that you can start to edit your time again. Because if we're in the habit of always saying yes to things, we probably are not in the habit of practicing our healthy no. So both of them go hand in hand.
How do you teach boundaries? A lot of what we've seen over the Me Too movement is a lack of boundaries, even knowing what they are. And it is important for women to set new boundaries, especially in today's day and time. How do you teach boundaries?
Yeah, of course, this is such an intensified awakening of social consciousness, which I think is so important. for all of us. And unfortunately, it happens when there's an absence of respect, of mutual respect. And we certainly see this a lot in the workplace and creating a lot of anxiety around it. I always say that healthy boundaries are like handrails on a staircase. Everyone feels better when they're there. Not only ourselves, but all of those that we influence, we can teach how to set those healthy boundaries. And that's really what I look at when I'm working with anyone. It's how does this affect the bigger picture? So for ourselves, those boundaries, you know, boundaries are not meant to keep people out, but rather they're meant to protect personal space so that each of us can develop, protect, and maintain our sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first ways that I begin to teach how to really set up healthy boundaries is what I call flag your feelings. Again, this goes back to everything that we've talked about thus far, Lisa, is that we get so busy in the doing that we've forgotten completely what we're feeling. And that's when we get into that place of feeling resentful and uncomfortable. So before we get there, let's have a mechanism. Let's have a plan. So a yellow flag. Me, and let that yellow flag really get a picture of that, let it pop up into your head, and that means pause and evaluate. I'm getting to that place where it just doesn't feel, it's my cautious sign, my caution sign.
Your own personal yellow flag.
Yeah, your yellow flag is it means you're very close to your limits. Take some time to respond. Before you respond, take some time. And then if you're getting to that feeling, that red flag, that's when you need to stop. You need to stop and pull back, firm but kind. Be sure that you take that moment and that time, whatever that might be, so that you can come back in and engage in clear communication rather than being in a reactive emotional communication. So use clear communication. Be mindful of the relationship and the unique style of the communication that you have with the other person. Be direct and empathetic, not defensive and accusatory. And what's really important, keep it simple. Go with your gut. Don't overthink it. Boundaries are really kind of easy because it always signals us internally first.
Mm-hmm.
And the habit is what drives us to say, sure, yeah, no problem. You know, that little voice perks up. Listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do that when we're so busy.
Right.
Slow down to hear that.
That's true, to know the yellow flag and the communication, to be clear with it. How do you train other people around you if you've been boundaryless for such a long time and all of a sudden you've got the same people in your life and you're going to start pulling back? How can you do that and make it a smoother transition or just not worry about it?
kind of a little bit of both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
there's what I call the inner circle, and those are the people in your life that you feel completely safe and comfortable with. Those are the people that will expect you to have boundaries and will accept those. And even so, even if you've been a person, as you said, that hasn't lived with any boundaries and has been yes, yes, and yes, you probably most likely will get what I call pushback. That's okay, because when you are setting your boundaries, if you communicate, just like we talked about, clear communication, be direct and empathetic, not defensive and accusatory, when you begin to set those boundaries, and you can just, I mean, a conversation, hey, I am feeling overwhelmed when I do X. I'm feeling overwhelmed when I'm asked to do A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to set in some boundaries. This is what it looks like for me. Because you want to engage a conversation with someone, that, especially your partner, so that they can now start to expect the shift. And it might be uncomfortable. It's like a new pair of shoes. The shoes are still really good, but you've got to get comfortable with them, right?
Yeah.
Now, our children is a whole different thing.
Right.
Because if you've, you know, raised a kid with doing everything for them, then and all of a sudden you say, now I'm setting boundaries, they are going to push back. That's their job.
Mm-hmm.
That is their job. You stay the course. Lead with an open heart. Lead with kindness.
Don't break down.
Don't break down. Go, call your Zoom friends or go take a walk, as my mother would do around the block, and yell and scream into her scarf, and then she'd come back and she was a warrior again. So just make sure you take those pauses.
Good to know. All right, so the Traveling Scarves, the Sisterhood of the Traveling Scarves, what is that about? Why did you create that organization?
Well, it's a grassroots charity fundraiser that I do once a year. And a very good friend of mine ended up with breast cancer. And the day that she went to be fitted for her what's called a hair system, we were in a conversation, and she said, you know, this is really great that my friends have gathered together and I now can get this, but I just don't know if I... It's just such a hassle to have to put this on every day, and my head gets so cold. I just want to still look pretty and feel good, but it's just such a hassle and takes so much time. And I went bing, 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 bing. And at about that time, I think the Sister of the Traveling Pants was around, and I thought, oh, perfect, uh-huh. Sister of the Traveling Scarves. And I was lucky enough to connect with a company that their story behind it, the mother and I believe the daughter, also had experienced cancer in their life. So it's just kind of a full circle. And then once a year, we deliver those scarves to the Stanford Cancer Center and for the patients that are there receiving cancer treatment. This year, we'll expand it a little bit further. But it's one of those things that you say, oh, I don't have time to organize that. And then
I was just going to ask that.
And you know that you've expanded the goodness. And when we expand goodness, it makes the world a better place.
Interesting. So you have found time. Did something else have to fall off in order for that to come up? Or did you just, how did you do that?
It's so interesting, that question, because I think when you're really passionate, and you mentioned this earlier about purpose and mission, things get very clear, and then things shift as they're meant to shift. Things that I might have been doing before I don't do anymore, because that is the space and time that we create this to happen. And so whatever that might be, whether it be my schedule, whether it be a social aspect of my life, whatever it may be, building in that time to make that happen is very important. And it's important because it moves beyond just myself, my business partner, all the wonderful people that donate their time and their money. It moves beyond us, and it brings a sense of togetherness. It's very gratifying and fulfilling to be a part of a union like that and to come together in community. And so it just, where things fall off, I don't know. They just reprioritized and shifted in the way that they're meant to shift.
Good to know. Did you come up with that in one of your visualization imaginations? Imaginative visualization.
As far as the Sister of the Traveling Scarves?
Yeah.
I think it was just that moment, you know, having that conversation with a good friend that I love and care for, and the sense of how can I help? And
got it. Yep.
It just popped
out of
up.
A need. Well, it probably had to do with, so in the book, and by the way, it's called Breaking Up with Busy, and my guest is Yvonne Talley. There are four super solutions. There's a super solution process, and is there four or more?
There's one super solution process, and it has five steps.
Five steps, okay.
Yes. So you were on target.
Close. But one of them is combining meditation with storytelling and imagination. How do you do that? Bring all those three together.
Well, with meditation, there's so many different types of meditation. But with self-guided meditation, it really is about creating a story. And we do this every day. We create stories every day. That's how we communicate to ourselves and the world outside of us. What gets us tripped up is the storytelling often can go off track, as I said, in the what-ifs. So now we want to really harness that ability to tell a story, a mental story from within, and we want to incorporate into that what I call sensing meditation, where we bring in all the senses, what I feel, what I see, what I hear within that meditation. And that, you know, when mindfulness is about being aware of your environment, your bodily functions, everything around you and within you in that moment. So that's all mindfulness really is, and it is a practice. It takes time to practice this. It takes consistency, and it takes practice over time. Mm-hmm. So when we bring in the mindfulness aspect of just being aware of what our body is feeling and our environment, and then we put into it our storytelling, our ability to create stories and pictures in our mind, and then we meditate that. We just run through it as though it's actually happening in that moment, in a meditative state. That's how the three pieces come together.
Listeners asking, and we just have a minute left, but about the art of complaining, about spending so much time complaining. Is that a very common habit of busy women, is to complain about the busyness?
I I would say no. I would say that that is a habit in general, that people will get into a negative mindset or an unresourceful mindset of complaining. It becomes a habit to look for the things to complain about. Maybe they were brought up by somebody that did a lot of complaining, and that goes back to those beliefs and ideas and values that we have. Is that really working for me to have that mindset of being of complaining? So for that, I would turn that around into, what's my solution? And I think many overscheduled women are constantly looking for solutions, creating them, and then doing more. So really the mindset of the overscheduled woman is that imbalance between obligation and expectation and a lack of personal replenishment. And her big thing is to get that replenishment, that personal replenishment in there. Once she gets that into balance with the career and the family, then she's going to be on a better path or a more improved open path for herself to have wellness, calm, enjoyment, fulfillment in her life.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Great information. And again, the name of the book is called Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. It is Yvonne Talley is my guest, and that's her website, YvonneTalley.com. You can check it out at the Aware Show website. And that's it for me today. Thank you so much to Gina Salvati, executive producer of The Aware Show, Joyce Walker, producer of The Aware Show, and D'Angelo. Thank you so much for engineering here today. And thank you, our wonderful listeners, for being here. Your energy makes these shows happen. I'm Lisa Garr, and I am asking for your support to become a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI, either using a credit or a debit card. It's completely safe, secure, simple, automatic, and it means a huge amount to keeping The Aware Show on the air. Once you've joined, you'll receive a BAI buddy card for discounts around town and a WBAI tote bag. And during the next 2 weeks, we're also sending an additional WBAI premium grab bag item to show our appreciation. So to become a WBAI buddy for any amount, it could be $3 a month, $5 a month, $25 a month, just go to WBAI.org or call 516-620-3602. And once your annual donation reaches or exceeds $25, you will also become a voting member of WBAI. So go to WBAI.org or call 516-620-3602 and become a BAI buddy for The Aware Show. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.
To be inspired? If so, I want you to listen to my show. I'm Harriet Cole, host of Dream Leapers here on WBAI. What I do is to bring amazing guests, artists, producers, writers, business owners, entrepreneurs who have accessed and activated their dreams and who will tell us how they did it to inspire us to do the same. Friday mornings at 9 a.m., tune in to WBAI to listen to Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. I know you want to be inspired. Me too. Join me.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a celebration. The award-winning Midnight Ravers can now be heard every Friday from 12 midnight to 2 a.m. So wake the town and tell the people. We'll continue to present the best in music, history, and social commentary, along with expert discussion of the important issues and events of today and yesteryear. So keep it locked into WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
David Kenny of Everything Old is New Again every Sunday night at 10. Please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again. Because everything old is new again. I like it.
To you.
Thank you for thinking of me. And I thank you.
And I thank you.
Let's say thank you to all you people out there.
I want to thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Hey, this is Shaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.